Good evening, everybody. Welcome to today's edition of Jewish Art, Idolatry, or Symbolism. My name is Chaim Metzger. Happy to be here with the Bayit. So last week we began the series discussing the Israeli flag, and today we're going to go on to the Lion of Judah, both in terms of, well, just we can see at the top right, the flag of Jerusalem. And so we're going to be exploring a little behind why you'd want to have a lion as part of your flag or your art in general, and hopefully explore some of the issues that are contained therein of both of using pictures of animals, and of course why you would want to have lion as a very central theme in your art. So here we go. Again, feel free at any point to interrupt me if you have any questions. Again, also if there's anything else again that's not on the slides that you'd like to hear about, feel free to ask at any point. Also want to say thank you to Lane for pointing out some of the sources that will be quoted throughout the evening, and for encouraging me to give the series on this topic. Okay, here we go. So again, there's three basic points we're going to be covering. Again, what does the lion represent? A brief history of using lions in decorations, as well as addressing the halakhic issue of can you place a sculpture of a lion or other living beings in the synagogue. So for some of the sources I'll be quoting throughout the evening. So one is the Shu'ut Omanut of Rabbi David Avraham Spector, was a Rav in Beit Shemesh at my in-laws shul. So He has a book of responsa about art, so we're going to discuss some of these issues. So again, so some sources are from there. Also, in terms of a lot of the imagery, that's courtesy of Rabbi Nathan Slifkin and his book, the Encyclopedia of the Animal Kingdom, which I believe I've quoted in the past. So again, excellent book, nice pictures, and has a lot more information about lions than I do. He has, I think, 50-something pages on it. I have, you know, a couple slides, so check it out. So now for some examples of the art that I'm sure is going around everybody's heads. So here we have, on the right, we have a carved wooden Torah ark from Eastern Europe. As you note, there's several things here that we're going to be discussing. Note the lions, note the what appear to be griffins with horns, which will also be discussed at some point as well in later weeks, not necessarily this week. I'll come up, so we'll see. So this is, you know, not an atypical Aron, right? This sounds like an Aron that you could have seen that you probably saw at some, somewhere at some point, but this actually is from, you know, Eastern Europe. Also, you know, the one on the left, which is taken from a shul in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Kesher Israel. Also, I'd like to point out that a lot of the sources are also taken from Rabbi Kiva Mels, who was the rabbi there, now he's a rabbi elsewhere. But at the time he was a rabbi there, which inspired him to do some research on it. So again, I will post, let me get the link for this PowerPoint. Let me share the PowerPoint in the chat. That way, if somebody would like to, look at it later or see any of the references, they will be able to. So before we move on to the next section, so what does everybody think? Let's say these depictions of having these in our shuls. So why would we want those in the front of our shuls? Before we look into it ourselves, why would you want to have these in your shuls? Any ideas why this is so common? Like, what is it? Everybody's seen it, right? Why would you want to have, you know, the luchot? Again, we'll talk about more next week. But why would you want to have lions in the front? Like, why? Any guesses? It's okay if you don't have any guesses. Just let me know.
Is it maybe because of the kruvim?
Because of the kruvim. Very good. We're going to get to that reason, right? Because the lions represent are stand-ins for the kruvim. And how do we know that the lions would represent well? So that relates back to a shiur we gave, a class we discussed together about what did angels look like and what did God's divine chariot look like, in which, you know, lions are one of the animals listed. So that would also stand to be a reasonable connection. Any other reasons we could think of?
For the tribe of Judah, Yehuda.
Right, for the tribe of Yehuda. Right, so again, right, so we're a big fan of the tribe of Yehuda and of Davidic monarchy. So sounds like a good reason as any to include that. So we shall see. Here we go. Okay, so now So also another point that in terms of the use of lions in art, it's beyond the use of shul. So also the, people may be familiar with this image created by Michal Weinstein in memory of Ari Fold, Hashem Yikom Domo. Again, so, right, so who had been, you know, who was killed in a terrorist attack after having neutralized his attacker. Again, for more on his story, click through in the link or Google Ari Fold, and you'll see more about him and his life. But again, so why is there the concept of, you know, of a lion? What does it represent? So now that we're formally at this point, so now I'm going to ask formally. So what do lions in general represent in everybody's minds? So throw it out here. What do you think when you think of lions? What do you think of?
Strength.
Very good. What else?
They're kings of the jungle, aren't they?
Right. Kings of all the wild beasts. Kings of the jungle. Very good. Any other suggestions? What else do lions make you think of? Maybe bravery, loyalty, maybe. Right. Power. So there's a lot of different things that you see in lions. So now as far as where we see them, we're going to go through some examples of where these ideas are expressed in Tanakh, and then we're going to also see whether or not there's other things that lions could possibly represent. So here we go. So as far as the lions being powerful, so here there are several explicit, there are many references to the lion's power throughout Tanakh. There's over 150 times when lions come up in the various names. They could be Aryeh, they could be Ari, they could be Lavi, they could be Elish. We'll see, again, there's a lot of different names. We're not going to go through all of them. For more on that, again, please see Rabbi Slipkin's book if you'd like to explore what each of the lions are and their usages. But just generally, so here are two verses that hopefully are familiar to us. So the second one is probably a little more famous than the first. So the first one is for Mishlei. That Laish Gibor Behema Lo Yashuv Bnei Kol, lion is the mightiest among the beasts and recoils before none. But the one that people are more likely to recognize is from the story of Shimshon, where after having slayed the beast and offered an impossible riddle to the Philistines, so his wife sells him out. And therefore he's, and then the response of the Philistines after they, you know, bribed his wife is, what is sweeter than honey and what is stronger than a lion? So that foils, Shimshon's riddle, and that leads to that leads to a lot of carnage afterwards. For more on that, please see the story in Judges. Okay. But again, as far as the lion being, you know, strong, no question. So the next point, as mentioned by Elaine, is the question of Yehuda as a lion. So the primary source for this is the blessings that Yaakov gives his children towards the end of his life. So here, this is the blessing that Yaakov gives to Yehuda. Okay, so we're going to focus on the middle three psukim, right? So Judah is a lion's whelp. On prey, my son, have you grown? He crouches, lies down like a lion, like king of beasts. Who dare rouse him? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, so that tribute shall come to him and homage of people be his. he tethers. Yeah, so we'll skip the next two because those aren't necessarily lion imagery per se. All right, so again, so the point here being is that we see that Yehuda is compared to different types of lions. A young lion, an adult lion, he's the king of beasts. And it also has something to do with leadership as well. Right? So the leader, and that Yehuda will not change from being the leader. So which will come more and become clearer as you read more about Davidic monarchy in the book of Samuel, Shmuel. So, but again, that not for today. We're just simply mentioning about the line of Judah and why, let's say, Yerushalayim, which was the capital of the Davidic kingdom, as well as the current capital of Israel. So it makes sense that they'd want to hearken back to the to Yehuda and to his power as a lion, which is why it's in their flag. Make sense? Okay. So another time when we see the use of lions is when we see that the Jewish people are compared to being lions. So this is this takes place in Sefer Midbar, where we are being blessed by Bilam. For whether or not we're happy with the blessings of Bilam, or we'd rather be cursed, by our fellow Jews, is a interesting statement by our rabbis that we'll hopefully get to when we get to the Parsha of Bilam, Parsha of Balak. But in the meantime, it's that again, it's describing the Jews as lions. Says they crouched, they lie down like a lion, like the king of beasts. Who dare rouse them? Blessed are they who bless you, cursed they who curse you. So again, here we see again referencing to the lion as seemingly as king of beasts, and we see the way that the lion is crouching and the way it demonstrates power in that fashion. So in case you're wondering that lions are could only be used to represent the Jewish people. So this is supporting what Mark mentioned earlier about the lions being compared to the divine. So here we have that God is compared to a lion, as we see in Sefer Amos, that the lion roars, and who's not going to fear? That my Lord, God has spoken, and who can but prophesy? So this is Amos explaining why he is prophesying, even though the rest of his prophecy that he's going to say is a little scary, and not necessarily people want to hear. But when God says to do something, you do it. Okay, so now just to sum up, again, some of the things that the lion can represent that we've seen so far is strength, bravery, king of beasts, and, you know, ruling class in general, Yehuda, God, as well as the Jewish people as a whole. Okay, so these are all reasons why you'd want to use a lion in your art and in other forms of your imagery surrounding your synagogue. So the question then comes up, but when do we first see it? So the first time we see that the use of a lion actively being used to decorate, you know, place of worship is actually the first place of worship we ever had, namely the Mishkan. So okay, we've been, a lot of Sefer Vayikra is devoted, which we're going to be finishing this this Shabbos, is devoted to just that, the Mishkan. So when describing the design of the Mishkan, so One of the points mentioned is Kruvim Maaseh Choshev. So what does it mean by being the work of an artist? So here we have Rashi to help us out, where he quotes the relevant Gemara, both in Talmud Yerushalmi as well as in Talmud Bavli, that of Yuma and that of Shkalim. Would somebody like to read the paragraph starting with the Kruvim? Will hopefully also relate to what we mentioned earlier about why we have lions in here in the first place.
I'll read.
Thank you, Elaine.
Okay. With cherubim, the work of an artist, the cherubim were figured on them, on the curtains, in the process of weaving them. not afterwards by embroidery, which is needlework, but by weaving it on its two surfaces, one design on one side, a different design on the other. Example, a lion on one side and an eagle on the other side, just as the silken girdles are woven, which are called the, in old French, fasci, from Yoma.
Right.
Jerusalem.
Okay. So we see here, right? So we see both the connection between Kruvim and lions. And we also see that there was a very difficult art form to pull off. I personally haven't actually done much needlework or anything of the sort. I know many people here may have. I personally have not. In regards to that,
I want to ask you, is there any evidence in any shoals of having eagles?
Yes. There is.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I haven't seen it. I have never seen it. I'm just curious.
Right. So there are some. Not nowhere near as common as lions, in terms of iconography. I believe that most of the time in America you might find if somebody has an American flag in the synagogue, they probably also have the top of an American flag is typically an eagle. But that's not necessarily for the purposes of being like the Mishkan, but in theory, people can. It's not necessarily the most common one. For that, we'd have to ask whoever designed the art in the given shul why they did not choose an eagle. But again,
well, you can say because what you're saying is that Yehuda is the lion, it doesn't apply to an eagle, so at least you get both aspects when you have a lion.
Right, correct. Right. So this way, right. So you can get right. Now we're getting. Now you can get both. So again, so even though the eagle doesn't necessarily relate to Yehuda as well. So, but we'll see. For more on birds of prey and art, hopefully we'll get to that another week. So, right for now. But again, the point was here: focus on that the lion is there, and that it's definitely a high form of art. So as far as when else it's used, the answer is it was used in the base of Mikdash as well. So as well as in the throne, as well as the next time it's mentioned is also mentioned in regards to Shlomo Melech's throne. So again, this is actually this was discussed just the other week in Toronto Torah. But here, so somebody like to read what the depiction of Shlomo's palace.
The throne had six steps, and the top of the throne was round behind. And there were armrests on either side of the place of the seat, and two lions stood beside the armrests. And 12 lions stood there on one side, and the other upon the six steps. And the like of it was never made in any kingdom.
Okay. So as far as having many many lions, so again, it's not just one, not just two. It sounds like there's around 26 lions in his palace, which is quite a few. Where someone else is showing off his strength as the Lion of Judah at the time, and he is definitely. Showing his power, and definitely worthy of note is that these are actual lions, right? Meaning that these are like to scale. These aren't like just depictions. It's like he made like full on sculptures of lions. So which we'll get to later on. Wait, how could you do that? So we'll see. So and then as far as you think, if you thought that was it, the answer is we are not done yet. It also comes up in the Beit Hamikdash itself. Which again, this was earlier in Sefer Melachim, but it gets a little bit of outdoor on my part. So, right. So on the borders that were between the ledges were lions, oxen, and kruvim, and upon the ledges there was a base above, and beneath the lions and oxen were wreaths of hanging work. For on the plates, on his stays, and on his borders, he engraved kruvim, lions, and palm trees, according to the space between each one, and wreaths were around. So as far as right? So we have all throughout the first Beit HaMikdash, the design theme had a lot of animals, and chief among them were lions. No surprise, because this was a temple designed by Shlomo HaMelech. Again, as we saw before, Shlomo definitely likes his lions. Oh, and then in terms of you're thinking, oh, maybe that was just something that Shlomo's obsessed with, and that's going to be it. So we also look towards the future, future Beit HaMikdash in the vision of Yechezkel, where he is describing the third Beit HaMikdash that will hopefully be built speedily in our days. And here he describes what the third Beit HaMikdash will look like. So as well, again, it definitely evokes imagery of the first Beit HaMikdash. And all over the wall, both in the inner and one in the outer, ran a pattern. It consisted of cherubs and palm trees, with a palm tree between every two cherubs. Each cherub had two faces, a human face turned towards the palm tree on one side, and a lion's face turned towards the palm tree on the other. So, again, similar. So here we have a combination of lions. Here we have lions as being one of the cherubs, right? One of the cherubim. So, again, this is not how the biblical cherubim would have. By biblical, I mean from the on top of the Aron, on top of the ark, right? The original ark would have been, you know, two cherubim that didn't have the faces of lions, but here that is the case. So as I mentioned before, right, the lions that we have on top of our Arons might be references to this. And true, we don't have the full cherubim, because, you know, we're not supposed to be reproducing the actual items produced in the Beit HaMikdash for our personal use, but it's, you know, similar to it to remind us of the Beit HaMikdash and what it used to be like. So now that we've discussed, you know, the many times that lions are used to decorate shuls in the Tanakh. So now the question comes up, are you allowed to put these in our shuls? So the first thing you probably say is, well, what do you mean? Like, we just said that's all over the Tanakh. Why are we arguing? Like, you know, so you could say, maybe it's different for, you know, there, you know, God said it's okay in the context of the Beit HaMikdash, but maybe we shouldn't be having it in our own shuls. So as far as some of the issues that come up, so here we have the Beit Yosef being Rosh of Cairo, quoting some of the earlier rabbis preceding him. Right, so again, around the time of the Middle Ages. So here are some of the opinions that come up. So who here likes having animals in their shuls? And would like to read the first paragraph. Any volunteers?
Okay, I'll do it.
Thank you, Mark.
The Mordechai cites Rabbeinu Ephraim, replacing images of birds and horses in shuls is not comparable to the signet rings mentioned in the Gemara, because there it is the face of a human being, the sun or the moon or a dragon which they worship. But images of birds and horses the Gentiles don't worship, even when they are separate statues. Even more so when they are depicted on clothing. As we learn in the Mishnah, that all faces are permitted except for that of a man, according to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. But the rabbi even permit the faces of men, so there's no issue. Well, that's really clear. That's really clear.
Right? Right? So,
I don't know what's going on.
Right? So there's absolutely no problem, right? It's not anywhere, anything neat. You may have thought maybe it's, you know, idolatry. This is an idolatry, right? Well, the Gemara mentions is very specific. This is not that. It's something clearly different. Nobody's going to be confused. The two, it's fine. It's fine. So the only problem is that on the other side of the argument, we have another one of the Rishonim, Rabbeinu Eliakim. So he quotes the Midrash Mechilta, which is, you know, Midrash Halacha, which forbids creation of even faces of animals, birds, locusts, or fish. As it says in Sivri Dvarim, when we are when Moshe is warning us against making anything we may have seen during the process of Har Sinai, and how God really, really hates us worshiping idols. Do not create create images of any animal upon the land. Accordingly, he demanded the removal of images of lions and snakes that decorated a synagogue in Colonia. So on one side, we have the Rabbeinu Ephraim, who's like, of course, it's fine. And on the other hand, we have Rabbeinu Eliakim, who made them remove the existing artwork from a shul because he thought it was idolatrous. So
some of the oldest shuls ever have the zodiac, and the zodiac has all these symbols and animals and fish and all that.
Correct. So right. So the question is, wait. So why isn't that a problem? Right. So again, it's the corner rainbow front. The answer is that nobody really worships the zodiac. Certainly Judaism doesn't. So, as in, you're right. If people were to be worshiping the zodiac, that'd be a problem. But generally, they're not really worshipped as much as they are, you know, viewed as being nice celestial images that happen to correspond to months of the year. So depending on how you view the zodiac, that would lead to a very, very big difference between those two. More on that, please look, that would be when we discussed what to do about belief in stars and constellations, so that we addressed that a little more there. But yes, assuming that you don't think that's outright idolatrous to believe or use in general the zodiac, then you should be fine. So again, these are the two main camps we have. There's also another reason that might make it problematic. So the Beit Yosef continues that the Or Zeruah adds another reason based on the Gemara Brachot that you should have nothing between you and the wall, and if one follows the advice of the Gemara Bava Batra and turns slightly to the north for wealth, they will appear to be bowing down to idols. Because there's lions in front of them, and they kind of turn towards the lions on the Aron. So then it looks like they're bowing down to the idols now. Like it very much looks like it. You know, you bow down for Modim and you're facing towards the Aron and there's a lion right on top. It looks like you're bowing down. Ah, you're not. I know you're not. Like it looks like it. And we prefer not that people think you're doing the wrong thing. So then we see at the end of the Beit Yosef, it concludes, but I've already written that all of the poskim disagree with the Or Zeruah and Rav Eliakim and allow it to be done ideally. So seemingly, the Beit Yosef is like, it's really fine. Don't worry about it. All good. So the only issue is that that's not the only time that that Rav Yosef Kairo, the Beit Yosef, comments. He also comments in a tshuva of the, called his tshuva sefer called Avkat Rochel, where he responds to community that we're making they're putting an actual full image of a lion on top of their Aron, and he told them to take it down. So in response to this, so the question is, what is his actual opinion? So to this, Rabbi Spector, quoting Rav Avadia Yosef, explains that there's a difference. Actually, sorry, he's quoting, this is his own opinion. He says that the difference between when you have images or sculptures on a wall in front of you and it's distracting and it looks like you're bowing down to them, such as when the line is over the Aron versus when decorations are to the side or behind you. So his opinion is that it's only a problem when the way you designed your shul and the placement of the lions, it looks like when you're bowing down, you're bowing down to the lions. But if that's not the circumstance, then there would be no problem. Right? So Avodah Yosef actually quotes many more instances where it's prohibited and why. And interestingly enough, they're mostly in, as unsurprising because it's Avodah Yosef. He quotes many Sephardic authorities that prohibit it, which ends up being the case. Generally, if you're from a Sephardic land, you would not have had an image of a lion in your shul, but that might also be because in those those are in generally Muslim lands. In Muslim lands, the Muslims wouldn't have any iconography whatsoever in their place of worship. So there's no way that you could, even, so whether or not it's allowed or not allowed, you can't have the Jews looking like they are more idolatrous than the Muslims are, because that would just look really bad. So that's also part of the factor there is considered, you know, when people look at it, do they say idolatry, or do they look and say, ooh, that's a beautiful piece of art you have there? That's also very relevant, because if the standard decorations are generally in the average mosque is generally, you know, geometric designs without anything remotely approaching something that might be considered to be an item of any sort. Because again, they're trying to stay as far away as they can from idolatry. So maybe that might be a factor, which that's something that Rav Yosef discusses. But we are, you know, I presume most of us are for more of the Ashkenazic lands. And definitely, I'm pretty sure that the Bayit is definitely a very Ashkenazi shul. So we dive into some Ashkenaz as well. So what should we do then, right? So do we end up following the Sfaradim and saying it's prohibited, or are we more lenient? So for that, so I'd like to point us towards the Tshuva of Rabbi Chaim Sofer. Somebody asked explicitly about, wait, can I put two lions on top as we have nowadays in all of our shuls? So I believe Mark before is commenting about how, you know, we've seen this in all of our shuls since, you know, dating all the way back to two millennia ago. So here we go. So God forbid to say that having lions in the Aron is in violation of making idols. To suspect the earlier generations who were like angels that they violated this prohibition of idolatry, those who say this are libeling the holy ones in the land, like all of our ancestors. Even those who argue and say it is prohibited because they suspect people will err, that wouldn't apply in public in shul. We are just more strict because it is a place of prayer. So he's saying that even according to the Sfaradim, right, everybody else that may say that you shouldn't, they're not saying that they actually think that somebody's in violation of bowing down to an idol. It's just like, we want to steer clear of anything problematic in our shuls. We want to have, you know, our shuls be a place of prayer and not a place of anything else distracting or any other form. And in the process, he also gives a very good explanation for why we need to have lions and why there's two lions specifically. Right? So again, mentioned before about the Maaseh Kruvim. So he says the purpose of using these two is actually to help improve our faith. In what sense? That there was a Maaseh Kruvim in the Mishkan to demonstrate that angels exist. And we have two lions and not one, so that people don't think that it is the shape of a deity that we are worshiping. But if you want to say that, wait, can't you say that there's two gods then? That's why there's two lions? No, that's not the case. Because as we see by the Aron, the Kruvim stretch their hands out upward towards God. Except God's overflowing power, which is also the opinion quoted by the Rambam, who, as many people may be familiar, is very much Sfaradi, like, and the, you know, people in Mizrach, meaning in the, you know, in the more Middle Eastern Muslim countries, very much follow the Rambam. And the Rambam said there's no problem. So based on that fact, the reason why we have our lions over the Aron is to remind us of the Kruvim, which helps remind us of God and the angels, similar to what existed in the Beit HaMikdash when we used to have the actual Aron. So the reason why we have the lions is because it's close and representative of what the original Aron HaKodesh used to look like. Clear so far? Okay.
I would think that the Sephardim don't have lions because Islam absolutely forbids any depiction of any beings, and therefore the Jews would be accused of idolatry if they had things like that.
They definitely would be. So actually, it's interesting. If you look, I believe there was a class on illustrated manuscripts. So there's actually a very interesting history in terms of illustrated manuscripts about how they dealt with that. You know, how you could decorate without actually being a violation of either the censors or of halakha. But
the bird haggadah.
The bird haggadah, for instance, that is the best example. Right? So that way I technically didn't do anything wrong, and therefore you do it, like, you know, because it's a bird. I didn't make a person, it's a bird. So yes, but in Muslim lands, it wouldn't necessarily fly as well, because they're like, yeah, you can't make birds either, so I don't know what you're doing. Okay. So now, jumping forward a little bit to, you know, the 20th century, so let's look at Rav Moshe Feinstein's opinion on this as well. So, again, so he was, you know, de facto gadol in America for the mid 20th century. So we'll see question was asked to him. In the context of this is actually following, are you allowed to have an American flag in shul? Is where this came up. So why is the little, you know, figurine on top, the little eagle, why is that not considered to be having idolatry in the shul? So there's a couple of points. There's many points he brings as to why it's not problematic, and but then he's not necessarily a fan of having the national flag in the shul, because, you know, separation between, you know, church and state, meaning, you know, we pray, prayer should be played for prayer, not necessarily including other things, but, you know, some people like having it, so yeah, that's a separate discussion. Here's some of the reasons why he says it's allowed. If you were wanted to put it in. So even if we were to be stringent for other opinions, the Ron would say that this only applies when non-Jews worship them. Right? So when do we have a problem of you can't put images in your synagogue? When this is an image that the non-Jews worship, and non-Jews don't worship lions, right? Currently. They may have once. Definitely now they don't. And also he echoes what we saw earlier in the Machane Chaim, that the simple minhag nowadays is the same as it was in the days of the Ron and the Shulchan Aruch, to allow lion decorations on the Aron and the Parochet. Even though the Birka Yosef says it is prohibited to do so, and even though he didn't forbid making one, or having such a sculpture at home is prohibited too. Because if you can't, like, he doesn't actually, even the pretty people say it's prohibited, they don't think it's that forbidden, because if not, then you couldn't have any sculptures or anything else in your house. But they just simply say, you know, not in shul. So, and while one can be stringent if one would like to in their own home, they should not introduce the stringency elsewhere. So if, for instance, you find that you're bothered by the fact that there are these sculptures that look like adultery to you, so that means in your own home, feel free to not have any sculptures. But as far as if in shul people like it and they want to have their lions on their aron, or the drawings of the lions on the aron, you should let them do it, because it's not really a problem. So as far as what we should do in terms of our standard practice, so the standard practice, as people have gathered at this point, is to have them in your shuls. And even though Rabbi Yosef Kairo prohibits it, we generally tend to be more lenient. As far as what you should do for decorating your own shul, please consult your local Orthodox rabbi for what you should do. Generally, anything involving any internal change to a shul will be met with much resistance and controversy, which definitely is an issue that needs to be discussed by people who are part of the shul, as well as rabbi, definitely have to be part of that conversation. So if you're looking to change your shul, decorate one, I advise you to both hire an excellent planner and decorator, as well as making sure that you approve it run it by the rabbi and the community first, because people get very sensitive about it.
Don't we generally not see human images inside shuls? I don't know if I remember seeing that.
Right. So human faces generally we don't put in shuls. That's because the images of people is specifically prohibited by the Gemara, as we saw mentioned a little bit earlier. And also, that's also very much that the terms of the iconography that the that the Christians have in their churches. So they often have, you know, depictions of biblical characters, also particularly like having a nice big picture of Jesus in front. So we generally try and stay very far away from something that looks like it's, you know, that actually is often worshiped towards. And also the fact that in a lot of churches, they also worship saints. So that any images of a person inside of a shul is often problematic on that grounds. So as far as whether or not you should have, you know, should you put, you know, the nice poses everybody's faces on it, should that be the shul or not? So that's a separate question. Again, please consult your local rabbi for whether you should be putting, you know, posters up. You know, like I've seen many places, you know, in the back of the shul, they put like putting like a little poster board with all the flyers. Again, for whether or not that's problematic having a human space in there because maybe looking around them. Again, that's a question. Again, please consult your local Orthodox rabbi in regards to that. So now just to for the summary. So just some of the points that we've covered this evening. So first and foremost, we discussed what lions represent, why you want to have a lion in your shul to begin with. So we mentioned many elements: bravery, strength, leadership, the tribe of Yehuda and the Davidic monarchy, as well as God and the rest of the Jewish people. And that's why it eventually represents Jerusalem as well. And of course, we saw this usage in the various forms of the temple, be the Mishkan, the first base of Mishkan, the third base of Mikdash. And as we all know, it's pretty ubiquitous. If you pop into a shul and you see it, nobody blinks twice, because that's just the minhag. As far as, you know, should it look really like a lion? Is this just a picture? That's a technical argument that people say and give reasons back and forth, as we saw. But point being is that it's not really a problem. Then as far as whether or not you can have a lion in your shul, so again, we saw several reasons to prohibit, which were, well, you just put an idol in your shul. Even if it's not really an idol, it still looks like you're worshiping it, which isn't a great thing to be doing. And also the other element is that you have two, when your shul is too pretty looking, it's very distracting, because instead of focusing on what you're praying on the words in your siddur, you're instead looking at the beautiful artwork in front of you. So the last one is probably the weakest one, because I mean, basically every shul I've ever been to has something beautiful in the front, even if it's not, you know, a depiction of anything particular. And as far as why you're allowed to have it in your shuls, so we said, well, clearly you're not worshiping it. So therefore that whole thing, that like the first two reasons are basically out the window. Nobody thinks you are, nobody pretends you are. I don't know why you think it's a problem. Also, the reality is that since the common practice is to do so, that's a very strong hint that it's definitely permitted. Also, as far as the practical end result, the answer is please, if you're ever going to try and change your shul, please consult your local Orthodox rabbi and your local board. Because if you were to try and do that without consulting everybody, you'd probably wind up with a new shul on your hands, because everybody would be upset at your new decoration. And also before everybody goes, I just want to remind everybody, if you would like to receive the recordings, please email me. I'll put my email in the chat. And also next week we're going to be continuing on talking about the Luchot. So if anybody has any questions regarding this year tonight or in general?
Yeah, I have a quick question. I stepped away for a minute, so excuse me if I missed this, but that idea that since the practice was permitted, it's okay, isn't that circular reasoning? In other words, the practice may have started mistakenly, and the fact that it was a mistake to start the practice, now that we see there's a practice, it seems to me that's not a valid reason.
So typically we assume that the early generations were not mistaken in their actions. So here, one second, let me back to see where that slide was. Here, one second. Here we go. So this is by the right. So this is not only mentioned by him, it's mentioned by many, is that we often assume we assume that the previous generations did things correctly. Unless we have like really strong reasons to assume otherwise, if there's any potential justification for what the common practice is, we will assume that the Jewish people, even if they themselves are not prophets, they're the sons of prophets. So odds are any minhag that came to the Jewish people and stuck around, odds are that that's a minhag that was there for a good reason. And we might not necessarily know initially why, but by looking into it more, we'll be able to see, like, typically we can justify it.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that.
My pleasure. Thank you for asking.
If you're familiar with Haile Selassie, who was the emperor of Ethiopia, he said that he was from the Solomonic dynasty, and his flag on one side was the lion with six McDavids.
Correct. So as far as whether or not he really is or is not, that's a separate question that I'm not going to get into, because it's a little political. But yes, he did claim that he's descendant of Solomon, which is, it's possible, relatively hard to prove. But yes, so that's why he used it as well. Again, as far as the leaders in Ethiopia being Jewish or of Jewish descent, interesting tshuva by Rav Ovadia Yosef about that, whether or not they're all Jewish or not, which is again a little bit. Well, that discussion will take us way beyond our time. So, but if you're interested, look into it. The history of Ethiopian Jewry, it's fascinating.
Sorry, just one question before you go. Did you say you're going to send us your email address to get past recordings?
Yeah, so I put it in the chat. If you saw, so it's cmetzger@torontotorah.com. I'll, a second, it's on the first slide also. Let me just go back all the way. Here. Okay, so.
Oh, good. Okay.
Okay, so again, please, right, so please email me again if you have any questions or suggestions. Is there anything anybody would like to be seeing in one of these sessions that you're particularly interested in? Please let me know. I'm happy to focus on it. Again, so again, next week we're going to be discussing the Luchot, as you know, because Shavuot is in a little over a week and a half, and hopefully we'll be able to get better understanding for what the Luchot looked like and why people like putting the Luchot all over their shuls. So,